From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made earlier this month on 60 Minutes when freshman member of Congress Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez offered a proposal. Ocasio-Cortez was discussing the so-called Green New Deal, and she was asked how Democrats can pay for their ideas. Well, one of her ideas was straightforward: tax the very richest of Americans more aggressively. Ocasio-Cortez said that the U.S. should raise taxes on a portion of the income made by the wealthiest. Here's how it would work. Once a person has made $10 million in a single year, every dollar of income after that would be taxed at a rate of 70%. Some of the immediate headlines were sensationalistic and inaccurate. Ocasio-Cortez does not want taxes to be at 70% for all Americans. She's focusing on the very wealthiest. And even still, many political analysts predicted that this would be the proposal that sinks her popularity, that it's too radical, that Americans don't want that kind of heavy tax burden for anyone, even hedge fund managers. But the newest polling data finds her proposal is actually broadly popular. Even 45% of Republicans like the idea. A total of 59% of Americans want this to happen. 71% of Democrats and 60% of independents are on board. Women support this idea by a huge margin. A slimmer majority of American men support it. But economists do not, largely speaking. The IGM Forum of Economic Experts and Analysts finds that only 18% of American academic economists and so-called economic experts think that this will bring in more revenue without hurting economic activity. So why is there a disconnect? Why does the American public want this top tax to pass while economists and pundits do not? Our guests are going to discuss it this hour. Welcome to the studio, Alfred Vitale, co-founder of the Association of Working Class Academics and co-founder of the Rochester chapter of Democratic Socialists of America. Alfred, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us is Amanda Getze, co-chair of the Rochester chapter of Democratic Socialists of America, DSA, you may hear them referred to. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Kevin Wilson is the chair of the Libertarian Party of Monroe County. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
All right. Thanks for having me back.
All right. So, Alfred, you are, as the co-founder of the Association of Working Class Academics, looking at polling data that shows the American public likes this idea, but a lot of your colleagues in the academic circles do not. Why is there a disconnect?
Well, I think a lot of colleagues in certain academic circles are really opposed to this, the ones who actually can dive deeply into that kind of economic data, which is actually very arcane and hard for most of us to understand. I'm not an economist myself. I'm a social scientist, so I do understand, at least in the social sciences and certainly in other disciplines, there is a lot of support for this. There's a recognition that the inequality has grown to a point where it's beyond ludicrous. It's actually detrimental to most of the people we serve in the social sciences.
Okay, well, let me just read some of the responses from economists, from economic academics. And I'm just going to read a few of these that were compiled after this proposal from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is clearly gaining traction and is at least starting a conversation about this. So here's Austin Goolsbee, who used to be one of the top advisors on economics to President Obama, a Democrat, and from the University of Chicago. He says, there will be more revenue, yes, but with lots of deadweight loss. That's excess burden or allocative inefficiency, a loss of economic efficiency when we get out of equilibrium. That's Goolsbee. Robert Hall of Stanford says, I think this 70% top tax would raise more revenue, but it would reduce economic output. Carolyn Hoxby of Stanford says, the evidence suggests that tax revenue would actually fall. Daryl Duffy of Stanford, more revenue, yes, but there would be at least a small decline in activity from the reduced after-tax incentives. Robert Scheimer of Chicago, the total tax rate would now exceed 85% for top earners in many states. This is surely on the wrong side of the Laffer curve, especially in the long run. And finally, here's Richard Thaler of the University of Chicago. He says this idea would be too easy to circumvent. He says this is a non-starter, and for good reasons, because people would shift income to cap gains. Let me go around the table. Alfred, that's just a small sampling. A lot of, from a lot of different angles, people saying this is not going to work the way people want it to work.
Yeah, I think some of that is speculative, though. I mean, what we've seen is whatever solutions come that are opposed to that, whether it's reducing that marginal tax or keeping those tax rates pretty low, as we see with current things, it is not stimulating growth, particularly for the 99.5% of the population. So that's a projection. I don't know that that's actually going to be accurate in the experiences of actual people.
Okay. Amanda, how do you feel about it?
Well, when we talk about this, I always think, I'm not a huge defender of the Nordic model, but one thing that I always think about is a lot, like, for example, Sweden has a Matt Brunig did a policy paper on this. They have like a 70% marginal tax rate, actually, that kicks in even at a way lower bracket than 10 million. It's at, like, let me look here, 98,000. Mm-hmm. So Sweden's doing just fine. They're okay over there. It's not, I think, when you're thinking about neoclassical economics, it's kind of, you know, it doesn't, we're, like Alfred mentioned, the predictions are not working out. The Nordic model shows that it is possible to tax the wealthy at very high rates and still get growth.
Well, if you go back to 1980, when Ronald Reagan took office, Americans paid a 70% tax rate on all income after 216,000. Not 10 million, 216,000. Mm-hmm. That was as recently as 1980. I suspect the libertarian in the room is not a big fan of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's proposal, but don't let me speak for you, Kevin Wilson.
Big surprise, no. No, I'm not a huge fan of that. It's that level of taxation is neither morally right or fiscally prudent, and that having the tax rate at that level, what we find throughout history since the 1950s and then when we had those higher marginal tax rates is that you get higher rates of tax avoidance. The reason why the tax was changed in the 80s was the hope that you could close some of those loopholes and have better rates of actually tax compliance in those areas. So,
and which we don't have now, right?
I mean, no, we don't have that now.
We absolutely have a country where the highest earners find all kinds of ways to shelter and shield money from taxation, mm-hmm. don't we?
No, you do. And to me, the better solution is to keep the tax rates lower, but make them simpler. Make it as easy as possible to do. You should be able to do your taxes on an index card. It should be as easy as that.
I understand the point you're making about avoidance, and that's something that I do want to hear from Amanda and Alfred on, because I think when Americans do hear this, they think, well, exactly what Richard Thaler says. You're just going to have the wealthiest people. They're going to call their accountant, and they're going to figure out how to shelter this money. But let me ask you just sort of a hypothetical.
Sure.
Let's say we could simplify the tax code in a way that it is not easy to hide or shelter or avoid. If we could do that, do you agree that after you make $10 million, you should be taxed at 70%?
Still, though. And the reason why is because I don't believe that the government's using that revenue for moral ends. And even taxing that income at that high of a rate isn't going to fix our deficit problem either. It's not a matter of, like, paying for things. We're doing too much as a government right now. I mean, I kind of take more of the Henry David Thoreau's civil disobedience take on taxation is that it's immoral to not to pay your taxes. It's just immoral to not think about the consequences of paying your taxes and what the government's using to pay those taxes with. In his case, it's the war with Mexico. In our case, it's a million things, including wars overseas and maybe border security policies you don't agree with. Just because we're bringing in more revenue doesn't mean it's accomplishing more good.
Yeah, the interesting thing is there's actually a lot of places where our guests will actually intersect with their concerns about, as you say, sort of a militaristic approach to foreign policy,
yep.
The spending involved there, maybe immigration, but very different views on whether the government is a good allocator of resources. So let's go back around the table here. Alfred, are you concerned that if the Ocasio-Cortez proposal goes through, 70%, again, if you're listening, when we say 70%, it starts at $10 million of income and above here. That's not very many of us listening at all.
No.
But are you concerned that most of the people at that level would just figure out how to shield it from that tax anyway?
No, I think they will always find ways to shield it, number one, anyway. And there are entire industries. There are large global industries whose sole purpose is to find ways to extract wealth, profit, right? So there's the industry of wealth management. But our governments, our political parties are also wealth management systems. They're distributing wealth and they're providing opportunities for wealth to increase for some, for their constituents. We already know that high levels of wealth do influence political outcomes. I'm sure the Libertarian Party doesn't have $600 million budgets for their elections. So there's a problem. They will find ways to buy things to prevent burden. My problem is that the more wealth you accumulate, the more you have access to the means to avoid burden. You want to talk about immoral? It's extraordinarily immoral to be born rich and live off of interest, but people do that. It is extraordinarily immoral to exploit workers. There's a ton more immorality involved with affluence than there is with simply providing a tax that is supposed to benefit the social fabric of America.
Is it a case, Kevin, where what Alfred is talking about with morality, you don't trust the government to make moral decisions on the behalf of vulnerable populations?
History tells me I should not trust the government to make moral decisions on behalf of anyone.
History also says that the government does a lot to protect, and not just the government, whether it's the nobility or aristocracy, spend a lot of their money to buy armies and police so that they can protect themselves, because everybody surrounding them understands that they are exploiting them. So I'm okay with this idea, except there's a lot of protections in place to make sure that the wealthy are not getting any kind of, you know, pushback. So,
I mean, so you think that the wealthy who have control of the government are going to keep our best interests in mind when they tax us and themselves?
We vote for the government. We don't vote for private interests. That's one. Two, government spends a lot of its money on private contractors, for example. So the government is actually spending a lot of its money poorly, I would say, and having been a government contractor myself, they spend it poorly. But it's to giving private individuals, individualist privateers, money, not government just buying things on behalf of others. So there's a little difference in what government spends.
You're not going to find me be a fan of rent seeking. No, I think both of us can agree on that. Look, we're not a fan of people who take advantage of government contracts to enrich themselves. No, it's not great. I just don't believe that there's any inherent immorality in being wealthy, that you can acquire your wealth in moral ways, and that shouldn't be taken from you.
Hold on.
History does not prove that.
I saw Amanda viscerally react to that. You want
as a socialist, the definition of socialism is that we understand that when profit is theft, and I know you disagree with that one, but I really don't care.
That's fine.
The purpose of taxation is deciding what percentage of the wealth that this country creates in the context of a society where we're all working to create this wealth, and it decides which part of the wealth gets reinvested back into the public sphere and which stays in the private. And as a socialist, I know that the profit that we're redistributing through taxation belongs to the people that it's going back to, and hopefully it gets invested in social programs like AOC's Green New Deal. But
okay, so a couple of things here, because I know we're going to get feedback from our listeners. It's happening already on social media platforms. If you want to call the program, we'll take your phone calls as we talk about this proposal from, among other people, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to set the top tax rate, and again, the top tax rate for $10 million plus earners in this country at 70% after their 10 millionth and first dollar. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. I want to ask all three of our guests at least to kind of give us your feeling on one important part of the conversation. She comes out with this interview on 60 Minutes, and a lot of the pundits who have not really distinguished themselves that much over in recent years, me either, by the way, I'm wrong on just about everything, says, well, this is going to sink her. You can't talk about a 70% tax rate in America anymore at any level. People don't want it. People don't like it. Turns out they do. When you actually explain this to people, 59% of Americans, according to the Hill's new poll, they want this. A strong majority of women, a majority of men, 71% of Democrats, 60% of independents, even 45% of Republicans say, yes, do this. I want to ask all three of you if we can at least acknowledge that right now this is not radical to American voters. The people do want this. What do you say about that, Kevin?
Well, that's true. But just because it's popular doesn't mean it's a good thing. We after all, I'm sure you guys wouldn't be thrilled that Donald Trump was elected president, and he's certainly popular. There's another economic policy that's very popular among a lot of Americans. It's trade protectionism. People like trade protections, but it's a really dumb idea to inhibit free trade. And same thing with this tax proposal. It's bad on revenue. It's bad for generating economic activity. It's bad for letting people use their money how they want. I mean, libertarians kind of have a different saying that involves theft. We always joke that taxation is theft, not Mm-hmm. So
it's not the right.
But, all right. Well,
at a certain level, you may think so. But if you think taxation is always theft, then you're just an anarchist.
Yeah, no, you would be an anarchist if you were. Okay. Yeah,
specific type of anarchist, though. There's an individualist strain of anarchism.
Yeah.
So, for example, there is an alternate version of anarchism, which is much more socialist in nature. Kropotkin, you may be familiar with.
Yep.
Okay. So we have mutual aid, this concept that, and in fact, my field is human development. Human beings aren't biologically, chemically, and in every possible way social, designed to be social from birth. Always social. Mutual aid is actually the way we've survived. We haven't survived through the Ayn Randian fantasy of the rugged individual, who doesn't exist in the real world anyway. So I think that yes, it is anarchist, and this is where I actually don't disagree wholeheartedly, as I come from an anarchist background myself. I just think collectively we need to think more about cooperation versus competition.
Okay,
that's fine. I like that. It's not done through government coercion. Wonderful. Great.
Okay. But to close the point, one of the things that we heard often in the gubernatorial campaign from Larry Sharp, one of the things you say often is that you think most people somewhere in their core have a libertarian bent, that people are socially liberal, fiscally conservative. They want government to be lean and effective, and they want government out of their personal lives. And that's what we hear a lot from libertarians. And I'm sort of summing up a little bit. Fair.
Yeah.
Okay. So what the poll on this proposal indicates is that Americans are very comfortable with a 70% top tax rate on the very highest earners right now. Does this go in the face of what you think about libertarianism?
Oh, well, it affects other people, and a lot of people are thinking about themselves. It's unfortunate that that's the case. But again, I'll stick to the point. Just because something's politically popular doesn't mean it's wise to do.
Fair enough. Okay, Amanda?
The New Deal. That was incredibly popular and basically built the economy of this country for decades. I'm not a socialist. I'm not a New Deal socialist. I want to go beyond that. I don't think that it's enough to just put money into like work programs and stuff. But like, man, you got to answer for that.
New Deal? Like, oh, sure. I'd love to talk about the New Deal. Oh, no. I mean, the New Deal to me is it was an attempt at FDR trying to prevent fascism and communism from rising in the country. It was throwing everything at the wall to see what would stick, to make people have the perception that he was doing something. And I think the actual programs themselves were inefficient, and they did do some good things, but that doesn't mean that was the best way to move the economy forward. And to be frank, he ran on, strangely enough, a policy of fiscal conservatism, and that's not what ended up happening, for better or worse. But we don't know because I'm not going to get into counterfactuals.
Let me turn back to Amanda for one more important point here, and I'll get to your phone calls. We've got a lot of feedback already. Amanda, I think at least what we've learned in the last several years in this country is there is a working class. And when I say working class, I don't mean the white working class. I don't mean white men. I mean a working class, people who do not have a lot of wealth in a country where the top wealth is really concentrated. This sort of large group of Americans is really frustrated with a system that they view as unfair. That's at least partially why the president who's currently in office was elected. And I think that's also why people in their 20s who aren't even thinking about saving money don't blink at proposals that their parents and grandparents tell them, careful, that's radical. I think that's part of what we're seeing here. I think a lot of people saw Ocasio-Cortez's proposal and they thought, well, that's radical. And I think people in their 20s and maybe in their 30s who are having trouble saving money in a system they think is unfair are saying, that's not radical. There's a historical root here. Do you feel that way? Do you feel that younger Americans are frustrated with the system and this doesn't look all that radical to them?
Yeah, and the reason for that is because we've grown up under the neoliberal consensus and we've watched it reach its peak, and now it's absolutely we're watching it degrade. We're watching it erode, and we're it's kind of like sandpaper, like scrubbing away, and all of a sudden we're left with like. We see what's going on, and people are very much feeling it, and you know, because we don't have very good class consciousness in this country, it's very confused. The anger is it's there, it's palpable, but it's not focused. There's lots of reasons for that, but that's why I think that's the frustration. It's class anger, it's class frustration, and it's gonna. You know, that those types of the conditions that create that are that's how to alleviate those things. That's part of the deal is we have to tax the wealthy, redistribute wealth, and build the country back up from the bottom up.
Okay, Alfred.
Oh, got so many things to say that. I completely agree. Of course, I think that's right on the money. There's a lot going on in terms of. So this, first off, this isn't really that radical. I mean, Amanda and I would agree on this. This does not go far enough. It affects the actual number of households this might affect is something in the realm of 16,000 or something, who, again, already have enough. You know, the cost of bread doesn't change for a rich person. So if you have $10 million and bread is $2, no problem. If you have $1 in your pocket, bread costs $2, it is a problem. They're not losing anything from this other than the principle of being able to say this is mine. And that's it. There's nothing. It's not a lot of money. And Evan, I think you mentioned it. This would contribute a tiny fraction of the money for a Green New Deal, let's say, or anything else that would be useful. It would barely fund, you know, even one of the smaller federal projects, even partially. So,
okay. And I have an email from Dave listening in Canada. We always appreciate those listening all over this continent and all over the world. That's fantastic. You've got a WXXI mobile app to do that. Dave is pointing out in a lengthy email, and I'm really grateful for it, that there are a number of economists who do support this. Yeah. When I say economists largely don't support it, that's some of the new polling, and that is true of a lot of academics. It's sort of the centrist Democrats to centrist Republican economists.
You skewed it. You mentioned a few from Chicago, and anyone who knows University of Chicago, there is a particular bent that
Chicago,
they have.
Stanford. That's fair. And yeah. So, Dave, thank you for that. But I do. I also think, though, that largely speaking, you do have this establishment mentality that is. Centrist left and right aren't that far apart on issues like taxation right now. Agree, Alfred?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think so. Look, what she did was drive a wedge into the conversation. And what we're finding is that there are more wedges emerging. The conversation has to happen. What's interesting about this and why it's popular, I think, is this is forcing people, i.e. whatever hegemony you want to choose, whatever government organization or whatever social class, it's forcing them to have to address the question of why they are okay with their wealth. Why are they okay that Jeff Bezos is worth $125 billion? Like, that's the conversation we're starting to have, which is the one that people in general have at the dinner table.
So this is important, and I know we've got phone calls and emails, and I promise you, we're going to work in a ton here. But Alfred has just alighted on something that I do think is part of the split, and I think this is the meat of the substance of what Ocasio-Cortez is doing, which is saying if you have people who are worth hundreds of billions of dollars, who employ hundreds of thousands of people, some of whom do not have health care and can't have to work extra jobs, that there's something immoral about that. Yes? Okay. Is there something immoral about that, Kevin, who is the chair of the Monroe County Libertarian Party? Is there an inherent immorality to that?
No, not necessarily. And you know, I would ask, how much wealth do you get to keep, and who gets to decide how much you get to keep? Like, what
who is asked?
Who's asked?
Yeah, we don't get that option. Amanda and I can't sit there and tell Jeff Bezos, we think, no, and the 500 million other people in the world might think, you have too much money.
You're on the radio right now. You can ask. You can throw out a number. 100,000, 50,000.
I'm okay with that. What? I'm actually okay with throwing out, because all wealth is arbitrary. All value is arbitrary. Value is not natural.
We're in a democracy. You know who gets to decide? The people.
Yeah, well, that really stinks for the minority, huh?
Well, I don't
yeah.
know. The, what do you mean, the 1% minority? About,
as long yeah. as it's the, as long as the other guys, it then does. It's fine. Oh, okay. All right, cool. Listen, I just want to make sure we're clear on
we
this.
The other, I don't. Elon Musk, who he's one guy. He did nothing to earn his money. He sits there and he tells people what to do, and he
founded PayPal, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's done quite a bit. And I do also want to point out that the system, as imperfect as it is, the system of globalization that's arisen over the last, like, 20 years, the liberalization of economics that's happened has reduced global poverty immensely. And there are a lot of challenges that still have popped up around that. The economy changes, people get displaced, and you got to deal with that in an effective way. But to me, I see that every time the government tries to intervene in those processes, they end up making it worse. And that's
– Should it be the government? For example, why is it that our children in school are not being taught? Well, listen, let's look at what $125 billion is in terms of actual money and what you have and what people have. Like, we socially can find this morally objectionable. We don't, because we don't have a voice to say it is, which is Ocasio-Cortez's point. We have to be able to say these things. We have to bring up this issue. We don't because they have spent every moment of their time, the wealthy and the affluent, protecting themselves from that kind of scrutiny, whether it's through philanthropy and buying things like hospitals to make themselves sort of buy some good public good. You know, they're getting tax breaks for them. They're not just throwing their money away out of kindness. They're putting their names on buildings. There's a lot there.
I mean, against philanthropists donating to hospitals?
I would like to know why does Bill Gates, for example, decide I'm going to donate 12% of my net worth and people applaud that instead of people saying, well, why not 15%? Why did you decide that you still need 88% of your net worth? Like, this is where the morality issue comes in on them.
His money.
His money. That's it. Okay. Except his money has repercussions on people's experiences and lives, though. His money. So the CEO of Pfizer, his money has an impact on our healthcare. The CEO of insurance companies, for example, this is why we have problems with getting anything close to a single payer system. We have people whose money, and we compensate them very highly, will continue to keep the system alive that compensates them highly. They're incentivized to keep this system that prevents the rest of us from having a basic need on the principle of saying, I have this and you don't.
I mean, I guess to me, the moral standpoint from this is that, you know, when is it okay to take someone else's stuff? Again, like, why should I take away
the police and let's ask the wealthy when that's okay?
I mean, I'm a libertarian. You ain't going to get an argument from me, but
I agree with that.
No, I'm half joking, guys. but anyhow, again, you know, like, what if I have two vehicles, like, is it okay for the government to take one of those vehicles because there's a need somewhere else?
Is it okay for your neighbor to take it?
Yeah, okay. So, oh, good. Well, I'm glad we're on the same. I understand where you are, that you are for stealing my stuff because someone else doesn't have it.
No, it's because it's my right.
It's your right to steal my stuff.
Sure, why not? What's the difference between that and earning money off of interest that's sitting in a bank? What's the difference between exploiting labor and not giving your workers a fair wage? You're stealing from people all the time. The moral gray area, is this what I have a problem with? There are some things that are immoral, and we should just acknowledge this. And property should not be the basis for the determination of what's moral or immoral. Property's imaginary. It's just a value that we ascribe. People's experiences is what makes moral.
One more quick question before we spend the rest of the program letting our three guests respond to your feedback, of which it is voluminous. Kevin, I do assume as a libertarian you do not like the fact that there are a lot of people who are working full-time and yet are really sort of hurting, scraping, not being able to save money, maybe don't have health care, are scared that their next injury, if they slip off a stairway on an icy day, is going to put them, you know, into bankruptcy. My guess is you want to see people have a chance to accumulate wealth and success.
Of course,
and comfort. Okay, so apart from the morality of whether Jeff Bezos having hundreds of billions while his workers have essentially no savings is okay, that debate's sort of been had here. Do you think that the system that you favor in terms of taxation and a way to structure it is more effective at getting those Bezos employees the chance to start saving, et cetera? Because part of what DSA and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and by extension, some leading Democrats, though there's a lot of hedging, I think, among the parts of many of the presidential contenders, some of what they're saying is, they're not even talking about the morality. They're saying, this is not working, that this system is creating huge inequality, and that this is the first step towards getting a system in which people don't have to be scared about a health bill, or don't really even have coverage, even if they do have coverage because of high deductibles, or have to work two or three jobs and can't save. They think this system is a better way.
Yeah. All right. Trying to figure out where to start. I mean, to me, there's so many issues inherent with, like, why people are taking the types of jobs that they are, why healthcare is structured the way it is, because we don't have anywhere close to a free market healthcare system, and we haven't for a long, long, long time. And to me, the tax rate for those, like, workers should be essentially zero. Like, I'm not, and some libertarians are going to hate me for this, I'm not all that against, like, some form of progressive taxation. I just think it should be much, much lower than it is now. In fact, and simpler. But to my kind of bigger point is that, like, the system that we have right now isn't a free market system. That healthcare costs should be lower, they ought to be lower, but the way that the government has interfered with the process keeps prices artificially high. I think that workers should strive to take jobs where they can and get better jobs. I'm actually fine with workplace organizing too. Like, that is a part of the process. I'm not against that. But again, I think that every time the government tries to interfere with that, where it tries to lock a system in place, we end up with something that's far worse than what we would have had in a more free society.
I think you have, and Amanda Getzey can kind of help with this, I think you have Trump voters looking at this saying, life is not very good and I don't even care anymore. I'm going to break this system and I'm going to inflame everything I possibly can. The pundits don't like it, good. The media doesn't like it, good. The party leaders don't like it, good. The elites, the so-called elites don't like it, good. So I think you have that segment of the American population. And then I think you've got sort of the AOC, Bernie Sanders voters who see this and they don't believe Kevin's right. I think Kevin is making an intellectually good faith argument, but I think they don't believe it and they think it's time for a real change in this direction here. Do you think substantively that this first proposal, $10 million or more, 70% tax, which, by the way, could easily change over time. We could go back to Reagan era or pre-Reagan era. But do you think substantively it will make lives better? Do you think that it will change the way people live in this country?
Yes, but it needs to be accompanied with by a very, like, we need to build up social wealth, the social welfare programs in this country again, and to the place that they were back in, like, during the New Deal, but farther. We can't, you know, we need Medicare for all. We need it. And Kevin mentioned that we don't have the problem is we don't have a free market healthcare system, which is the reason we don't have that is because it's an impossibility. It's, if you follow the logic of the market, you can't translate people's health and wellness to an incentive on the marketplace.
Alfred, you want to add before we get to our
question? Oh, gosh. Yeah. First, I want to say the reason the government has mismanaged or has problems in terms of the management of the healthcare system and the way you're framing it is that, in fact, it's the corporate interests that have pushed the government to do things. I think maybe there's a construction of government where there's a group of people who are sort of career politicians who do not communicate with the outside world and just sort of analyze things, and that's not how it works. Second thing is, to go to Amanda's point, you know, if everyone in America had healthcare, universal basic income, an access to the things that they need universally so that we all have this, I can understand this idea that competition is something. But it's not good science to sort of compare people's experiences when they're so different and have such difference in terms of what they have access to. We don't have a fair system yet to even make it so that there's a Darwinian-esque kind of competition. It's not possible. Too many people are starting the race 100 yards behind the starting line, and too many people are starting it 50 yards ahead. We don't have any equality yet. So I don't understand how we can make this sort of claim that there's this possibility that people can rise and pull themselves up by the bootstraps when everybody's pulling them from different places. So let's level the field. And I think this is what, right, Amanda? This is...
Well, yeah, you've mentioned multiple times, alluded to government being coercive. The reason it's coercive is because capital controls it and the people don't.
Yeah. No, the reason government's coercive is because that is the nature of government, that when you decide not to follow a law, that they are able to use force to try to get you to comply with the law or take you to jail. That's the nature of government. That's what it is,
when we have
for good or bad.
When we have a democracy and people are choosing a true democracy, we have nothing resembling one at the moment because, like I said a couple seconds ago, capital controls it.
Representative Ocasio-Cortez actually is a far better representative of the 99% constituency than the 1%, unlike a lot of people in Congress who really are. I mean, the fact that anybody would defend the 1% who might be whining about this is insane to me when they are represented elected officials. So I do have a problem with government in that regard.
I must jump in and say it's 12:41. I regret not spending both hours on this, but we're going to get your feedback next. So if you're on the phone, if you've emailed, we're going to get through a lot of comments after our only break of the hour, and we're right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Rochester has become a hotbed of lifestyle-based medicine. We're really just talking about food, what we choose to eat and not eat. Have you thought about moving to a vegan lifestyle? Have you thought about plant-based food? We're going to talk about the impact it could have on your health and all the new things that are happening in Rochester as a result next hour. Welcome back to Connections. Our guests include two of the co-chairs of the Rochester chapter of Democratic Socialists of America, Amanda Getzey and Alfred Vitale, who is also co-founder of the Association of Working Class Academics. And Kevin Wilson is chair of the Libertarian Party of Monroe County. We are talking this hour about the proposal from freshman member of Congress Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to raise the top tax rate in this country to 70%. That is for very few Americans, and that would be so if you make $10 million, anything you make beyond that in a single year is taxed at 70%. Polls indicate that about 45% of Republicans favor this. A large majority of Democrats favor it. And a pretty solid majority, 60% of independents, like it. We're talking about what the results might be. And we're also talking about a lot of sort of related issues, the morality of taxation, how governments use money efficiently and not, and why this proposal is so much more popular than the pundits initially predicted it would be. I'm going to get let's do this. Let's take sort of a quick sample pile of your cell phone, your phone calls and your emails as well. And then our guests can respond to anything they hear, because a lot of people want to weigh in. Tom in Brighton first. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I think we need to use some hard numbers here. Suppose you're making not 10 million, but 9 million. What would the tax rate be? Suppose it's 1 million. What would the tax rate be? What if it's 100,000 or 50,000? We need some hard numbers. And I think there's just too much hand-waving. You know, when they have these polls and they say, do you like this idea of 70%, and a large number say yes, they're responding, they're compressing their ideas into a very simple yes or no answer. What they're really saying, I think, is they want higher taxes on some people and lower taxes on other people. They're not endorsing the idea of a 70% tax on 10 million or above.
Okay, Tom, thank you. So first of all, I think to his point, well, what if you're making $9 million? I think suddenly the concern is a lot of people will be making $9.9 million, so they could keep their tax rate of what, Alfred?
37%.
37%, even though most people at 37% find a way to pay something along the lines of in the teens.
You have $9 million, you're putting some of that away into some kind of shelter, you're hiding it. So it's either way.
But the actual rate would be 37.
Yes.
That's the current rate.
Yeah.
And guess, do you agree, disagree when he says this is really about Americans saying we want higher taxes for some, lower for others?
I think I agree. And I also think the polling is the problem, because we're not stratifying that polling by social class, for example, because I can tell you, I grew up in housing projects in New York City, and every person in that housing project, I guarantee, would say, oh, I'd have no problem taxing 100% over $10 million.
Yeah, and you know, in the film Vice, Adam McKay's new film about Dick Cheney recently riffed on the idea of how you poll. And it was Frank Luntz, for example, who found that for a while the estate tax was pretty popular. But they started calling it the death tax in the 90s with Grover Norquist, and people went going, wait, if I die, you're taking my money? Well, they're not really thinking about the fact that you probably don't have an estate for them to take. But it became largely, broadly unpopular. So some of this is packaging, some of it's messaging, but I do think it reflects that when you explain the proposal, it's certainly right now more popular than a lot of the pundits predicted it would be a couple of weeks ago. Let's keep ripping through your phone calls. Don in East Rochester next. Go ahead, Don.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
To your libertarian guest, I would like to say that he talks about that the government does not have the morality to spend our tax dollars wisely. I have never seen the Libertarian Party, maybe some individual libertarians have, but I've never seen the Libertarian Party engage in any kind of activity to demand that the government spend that tax dollars wisely. I don't remember him being involved in the 1980s when we were demanding that Reagan abandon his Star Wars project and use that money to spend on for social goals. I don't remember the Libertarian Party being out against the war in Vietnam, against the war in wherever. The wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, I don't remember the Libertarian Party as a party being involved in any of that. Yet they have the audacity to say that the government has is not able to morally spend our tax money. They don't demand that the government do that. They just don't want the taxes.
All right, Don, thank you. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, that's incorrect. We are pretty consistently anti-war, that we do not want any foreign intervention. We weren't around in Vietnam, so we couldn't, you know, be a part of that. But we were against the military escalation under Reagan. We were against the war in Afghanistan. We're against the war in Iraq. We're against all the wars that we're engaged in right now, including the ones that are undeclared and started by both Trump and Obama and Bush. So,
and private
yes.
companies involved, remember. Profiteering always is there.
No, there is a lot of that, and you're right. I don't like that, but to me, that's a product of government intervention, getting overseas. But I don't think that that private firms existing necessitates that. I think, in fact, having a more free market society, it makes it easier to avoid war, and having a more socialized or nationalistic society tends to drive countries towards war more often.
Chris writes to us and says, forget retooling tax rates yet again. If we really want a more equitable system, how about taxing capital gains as regular income again? The ballooning of our income inequality stems from that so-called reform. People should not get a tax break for speculation. What does a libertarian say to that? Yes or no?
That I think investing in companies is good, and if companies want to set a rate to let their investors profit, that's perfectly fine moral activity.
Okay, Amanda and Alfred?
Shareholders will get a return from the profits that are made by a corporation before the workers' wages will increase. That's wrong. I mean, there's a simple morality there. Shareholders are getting money when a company is profiting, not the laborers.
Okay. So here's one for Amanda. Jean writes and says, I find it ironic that the working class, of which I am included, is so angry about the wealth distribution and lack of money when so much of our extra income is spent making the wealthy even more so. We all have iPhones. We shop at Amazon, Walmart, and Wegmans. We've got cable. We have Netflix, and on and on. We're the ones parting with our money so easily. How about we increase the sales tax? Maybe we could make better and more thoughtful spending choices if we don't like the business model as it is. I identify as a liberal, and I believe in healthcare reform, but you're guest Amanda is as shocking as Trump to me. It's from Gene.
Oh, sorry.
Whoa, wow.
The problem is we have in the United States, we have capitalism now is it's an economy based on the production of commodities, and it needs a market to sell the commodities to. We are the market. We're buying. We need to buy the commodities in order to have an economy. There's no amount of withdrawing from that that's going to change that. What changes that is when we don't have capitalism.
Okay.
That's the basic definition of it.
I think I'm not sure, Kevin, if you would agree. I actually think the increasing of the sales tax is a great idea, particularly for luxury items, because, you know, if you're going to spend $500 million on a yacht, you should be prepared to pay $250 million in taxes.
I'm not disagreeing with just
I know.
Sales tax are good, but fundamentally.
Yes, yeah.
Well, yeah. So you don't think sales taxes are regressive?
What are you saying?
No, we're aggressive. So if you're putting a sales tax on like everyday items, right? If it was food items, consumer goods, computers, phones, whatever stuff you're buying at Walmart or Wegmans, like if you're saying that the price of bread is the same for a rich person as is for a poor person, isn't that regressive then? And that regressive form of taxation, because a higher percentage of income will be. We don't have to have sales tax on food, though.
Yeah, we should have a luxury tax on
luxury. A loaf of bread and
goods.
A yacht are not the same thing.
Right. So I think Kevin is posing is if you had a sales tax across the board, it would be regressive.
Yeah,
it sounds to me like DSA is saying it should be targeted to luxury items or certain thresholds of spending.
I am saying it.
Okay, yeah, all right. Alfred for himself.
Okay, I want to be clear about that, just because a sales tax on everyday items that normal people are buying is regressive, because again, you're spending a higher percentage of your income. You're taking more out of those people's pockets that they need to survive.
But I don't think they're arguing for that.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
So Earl writes to us and says, the idea of his or her money, the money that, quote, belongs to Bill Gates or Bezos, was generated by the employees of their respected companies. The idea that Gates or Bezos earn that money is absurd to me. Bezos doesn't and cannot work 10,000 times harder than his employees. And therefore, the idea that that money belongs to them is one of the fundamental problems with libertarianism. So they're saying, if Bezos is making 10,000 times his workers, he can't work 10,000 times harder. How can he put a claim into that much income inequality?
He invested in the capital. He built the ideas that helped found the company. He organized the labor force and asked people to voluntarily come and work for him.
And
he supported
people need the work. They can choose where they want to work.
Yeah, but he but he games the system in many ways too, just like a lot of the people in his sort of bracket. They are kind of controlling the system to keep themselves afloat. That's part of what they do. I mean, you can call it investing, I can call it, you know, hiding.
All right, so Gary writes to us and says, yes, why would we listen to the experts? Why would we listen to mere speculative projections of academics, economists, and experts in this when we have a 28-year-old bartender who didn't pay for employees' workers' comp to show us the way? He is, and by the way, Gary identifies as a Democrat, but he's saying he does not believe Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has the expertise to lead this conversation as a Democrat, and he seems annoyed with his own party.
Her role is a representative. Her role is a representative. She is absolutely qualified to be a representative. That's it. She is a representative of her district. In terms of this conversation, why is she not qualified? This is not a statement. I can go to school number 33 and ask a fifth grader if we have an unfair system, and they'll say yes. Are they not qualified because they haven't what? Where's the cutoff makes you qualified to make a statement?
I hear what you're saying, Alfred, and I actually think there's two things in play here. I mean, I think people's voice and their own experience. Ocasio-Cortez is someone who was working as a bartender, who understood what it was like not having health insurance, who has a worker perspective, no question, and has friends and associates in that category, and can speak to the pain and the struggle that workers feel. I think Gary's also saying, though, you can't just discount expertise in long academic careers.
There's lots of other experts that we didn't talk about. Okay. I mean, there are economists. The IMF, there are even at places like
Piketty.
The IMF, there's, Piketty, for example, is another one. There are economics. There are professors of economics and advisors to government organizations in the past administrations who also support this.
Okay. Anything you want to add to Gary as a Democrat?
Well, I would like to, Alfred, this is something you might have a perspective on. There's a lot, the intellectual class in this country they have a class character.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's not low, a lot of times it's not lower class.
No, this is why we started the Association of Working
Right.
Class Academics.
Precisely.
Well, that doesn't make their perspective illegitimate.
It means they have a perspective and they have an interest in maintaining and furthering the aims of the upper class. And that's not the same as the people who voted for AOC. Conflicting interests.
Let me get one more phone call at least here. And boy, if callers, if we didn't get through, I guess we're going to have to keep talking taxes because this has lit people up. Kenyatta, go ahead, Kenyatta.
I don't think there's anything wrong with capital controlling what capital controls. What I think is wrong is that the Federal Reserve can create its own capital by just making up credit and loaning it out. I think that's a real issue, and it squeezes both the workers and the small business owners.
Okay, Kenyatta, thank you. Agree or disagree, Kevin?
Well, I mean, I could talk about the Federal Reserve all day. We got 5 minutes left. But yeah, I mean, there's significant problems with how that system's used to create money and how it's used to distribute funds. And yeah.
But they're academically trained people there. They're also economists. This is part of the Federal Reserve is also made up of economists.
So kind of to your point is I don't know that they have the expertise to be able to control the economy on such a big a scale, that there's a knowledge issue with economists, that you can't possibly know how people are going to make decisions on the micro level. And that, to me, says that you should leave those decisions as much as possible to individuals and not try to have top-down decision-making in the federal government or really any government.
But they're controlling the environment with which the micro level exists. That's the problem. Again, we're not all on the same playing field.
All right. 20 seconds. What do you want to leave the listeners with as we continue to have this debate going forward?
Keep talking about this. This is important, and this is not the last time this conversation is going to happen. This is the start, I think.
You're absolutely right about that. Amanda.
Yes. I mean, I'm excited to see what AOC does. I hope she makes an actual proposal like her, I hope she gets a tax policy white paper. I'd love to see that.
All right. We will continue that part of the conversation. Kevin?
Well, I'll quote AOC here, where she said, it's better to be morally right than factually correct. And I think that speaks volumes to what the ideology is.
It's a little bit of a truncation of what she said there, but go ahead.
But look, I generally believe that people should be as free as possible, that if you earn your income, that you should be able to keep it and spend it the way you want, as long as you're not hurting people or taking their stuff.
I guess I'm just going to hold all of these emails and phone calls we got that we couldn't even work in and just ask you if you'll all come back and we continue this good faith discussion on I really appreciated it. Kevin Wilson, where can people learn more about the Libertarian Party of Monroe County?
You go to rochesterlp.net.
Rochesterlp.net. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
As always, Amanda Getze and Alfred Vitale. If you want to learn more about the Rochester chapter of Democratic Socialists of America, go where?
Search us on Facebook, Rochester DSA, or go to twitter.com/RockDSA.
Rochester DSA. Thanks, Amanda. Thank you, Alfred. Thanks for taking the time. Short break. Woo! More connections coming up.